So welcome. Nice to see a lot of you. I think I write with a lot of people, but I don't always put the face with the name. Sometimes people look different in their pictures on Skype or Ustream. I'll do a talk for the first 45 minutes, and then we'll have a 15-minute break, and then we'll do another hour or 45 minutes. Sometimes when I do the first part of the talk, particularly at the beginning, I just shut my eyes for periods. And then sometimes I even talk with my eyes shut, so I look a little odd, but that's what happens. So non-duality can become really intellectual. But the question comes back to, what was it that you originally got into non-duality for? Ultimately, that can't be answered. Like, no questions can be. But in the beginning, I'm sure the movement was because there was suffering. There was discomfort, or there were questions arising about what to do with life, or how to live a life, or how to get the happiness that people have always told you about, or how to achieve it, to get there, to have the right life. And sometimes that discomfort can just be a little niggling every so often. Just a little sense that there's something not quite right. And sometimes it can come on so incredibly extremely. Maybe something happened, like maybe there was a tragedy, or you lost your lover or your husband, or something happened which unsettled the world, or unsettled the world you thought you knew. Or maybe there was an awakening of some sort, and there was a sense that there was something else to life. But most of the time, the reason people begin to get into non-duality or spirituality, or begin to ask about these questions, is because there was a discomfort. you don't seem to get to the place in which you'd hope to get to. And every time you think you've just about got there, it's never really satisfying. It's never really quite it. It doesn't really fulfill. So normally in most apparent stories, the reason that they get into this subject is from a sense that something's not quite right. And then it can become so intellectual. You go to different teachers, you go to different speakers, you can read books on it, and it can become very intellectual, an understanding of non-duality. And you can maybe even think that you're enlightened. You think, there's nobody here. This is all appearing for nobody. And even if you're screaming at your partner in rage and deep in agony in bed, you still believe you're enlightened because there's nobody there and there's nobody it's appearing for, or some story that you tell yourself. But all discomfort in this world, every ounce of discomfort, comes from a sense of being separate from life, which is a really radical and full-on statement. And what's discomfort? What do I mean by discomfort? Because I don't mean pain. I don't mean if you burn yourself. I mean that sense of feeling tight and contracted and like life is insulting you. Like this, you see something happen and it's a sense of feeling pulled in your body or sickened in your body. And it's a physical sense, it's an energetical sense of feeling limited inside and feeling like you hit against life when it doesn't do what you want. So you have an idea about what you want, and then when life doesn't give you that, it's a sense of sickness, it feels like. It hurts somewhere where they describe the chakras are, somewhere here. It doesn't hurt so much in the toe, but it's this area where it hurts. It feels almost like physical illness at points when it's really strong. Sometimes it just feels like mild disease or discomfort. And that whole sense is a byproduct of the belief that you are a separate body walking around independently in this world, which is a really full-on statement. All suffering comes, and I don't mean pain, although even the idea of pain does dissolve, but I don't mean the cutting yourself pain. I mean that physical energetic sense of discomfort dissolves with the collapse of separation. Everything that you think was a problem was never the problem. But it feels so real because the body's in so much pain when you feel like something in the flow of life isn't right. It feels so real that that's the reason. So you see your partner kissing someone else, or you see an animal being tortured, or you see a car crash, and there's that physical contraction and discomfort. You believe that it really is the flow of life. It really feels like that. The thoughts are telling you it's the flow of life, as well as the sensations are telling you there is a problem in the flow of life. And when I mean flow of life, I mean what you think you see in time. I mean by the world, what you think is happening out there. And this is really radical. I'm not talking about a sense of, I'm not talking about an intellectual sense of knowing awareness and all discomfort arises in awareness, or an intellectual sense of knowing there's nobody and then there's still discomfort, but there's nobody that it's uncomfortable for. I'm talking about that tight, energetic separation. And in talking about it, that does create the dilemma. A lot of speakers sometimes avoid pointing out so clearly what separation feels like, because what the person does often when they hear that is they then tell the story that they've got it wrong, because they still feel that sense of an energetic contracted self. But that's what's happening here. I'm trying to point out as clearly as I can what suffering is. And basically, nothing that you think is the problem is the problem. Nothing that even you feel is the problem is the problem. Problems do not exist. There is just movement happening. And you are that movement, and that movement is love. And that movement is equally still, as much as it's moving. But the problem that humans have, that no other animals have, is the idea that it's happening to you, which becomes an energetic sense in the body. It becomes like a sickness. So that means that everything you've believed to be the problem, every person that you've blamed for creating your problems, every situation that you blame for creating your problems is a lie. That's a really full-on statement if it's really heard. There aren't problems. This is not often liked by the person, by that energetic contracted person, because that energetic contracted person only exists in problems and fixing problems. So it doesn't want to hear this. It wants to keep fixing problems. Because that's its job. That's what it's always been taught to do. And that's what it's been taught happiness and fulfillment is fixing problems in the flow of life. It doesn't want to hear this. It might even hurt hearing this. But everything that hurts isn't something to be run from. It's in a way your friend, because it's saying this is an illusion, this is an illusion. So if you're sitting here and it's hurting, it's because you have false ideas. Not that there's a you there having false ideas, but there's false ideas appearing in this, if we put it in more non-dual language. There's ideas that are hurting, that are physically hurting, and then the mind quickly goes, she should stop speaking, or he should stop doing this. And then you constantly are running from the flow of things, and you can never, ever get away from the flow of things. You can never escape it. It's an endless cycle in a hamster ball. I'm sorry if I'm beginning to speak fast. I have to take the earrings off. I begin to take clothes off when I get excited. Eventually I'll just be sat here naked. And you'll be like, oh. There's nothing to run from. Everything is love. But it's like an energy that's formed of things that hurt, I have to fix and move away from. So you've been taught what's right and you've been taught what's wrong and you've believed it. And it's not you, there's not really a separate you there, it's just a movement of energy that's got stronger and stronger over time. Of this is a problem, my lover shouldn't have done that, my kid shouldn't have done that, my boss shouldn't have done that, and I need to fix them. I need to teach them that they're wrong. I need to stop them doing whatever they're doing because I'm hurting. You hurt because of your ideas about the situation or because of the ideas that are appearing. And the way that you know that it's a false idea is it's kicking you in the freaking guts. And then the mind's like, there's nobody here, it's happening for nobody, if they're into non-duality. Or if they're not, they're like, that motherfucker, I'm going to stop them, put duct tape over their face. Or whatever it is, lock them in the cupboard. I will stop it. The nature of everything, and I've been negative the first period of this talk, talking about what's an illusion, but the nature of everything is absolute love. Love beyond personal love that we know. But it's not something I have more of. It's not something that anybody in this room has more of. It is us. It is this. And I know I'm trying to go in and out of speaking non-duality and then trying to sound more human. But love is everything that appears. And this, your nature is beyond our words of positivity, like divine or love or heaven.
It's so free and uncaged that you begin to even fail to put it into words. And I think that what happens in these talks, not just my talks, but other speakers that are out there, I don't want to make this exclusive to this body mind mechanism, is a reminding of that. And it's not really reminding someone. This is when language begins to collapse. It's kind of a reminder of everything, for everything. It's not really I'm reminding that body-mind mechanism because there's not a body-mind mechanism in there. There's not somebody in that body-mind mechanism. There's just a reminding that's happening in this. And the less focus that there is in problems, myself, the more it becomes obvious that everything's always been free and you are everything. I can't teach you this intellectually. It's very hard to put this into words, but what might be happening now is you are beginning to feel it, but it's not a feeling in the body. It's something that's always been there when the body was 2, 3, 6, 8, 10, when it had good experiences, bad experiences, when mundane experiences. It's been there always, and it's not limited to any of those experiences. But in all those experiences, the focus has been normally on the separate person. So it's like love has always been there, no matter what tragedies or beautiful experiences have been happening for that person. And it's in everything. It's not in a limited experience. It's not in a limited idea. It's not in anything you think of, yet it's everywhere. The whole room is vibrating love. It's nothing you see, but it is you. It has no limits, so you can't define it as a thing. And all things are that. And the deeper and deeper, although, excuse my language, it's not really deeper, just trying to speak about it, the deeper and deeper this is heard, it even becomes obvious that there are no things. There is no thing happening. This isn't a two reality, a divided reality. this isn't the reminding that I said these talks are. It's not limited to these talks. You will also know it from when you've fallen in love with things. Because the nature of falling in love is for you to disappear momentarily, or for the person to disappear, and then everything just disappears into what is. So when you're kissing your lover, or listening to music, or whatever it seems like the individual loves, often in that, the person, the separate energy, is disappearing. Then the mind comes in and says, I love that object. I must contain that object. And then often there's lots of struggle around it. This is often what's happening in relationships. And it's so funny because the way out of it is never in containing the objects. It's never in maintaining anything. It's never from running from the feelings of discomfort as you lose the object. It's in the stillness of what's appearing. I'm jumping from language to language, but maybe you get a sense of this underneath the language. I'm jumping from impersonal to personal language. This isn't about avoidance. This isn't about avoiding the character or the person or the body-mind mechanism, because the body-mind mechanism is about everything. And you will never get out of the illusion by denying the person. The only way out of this illusion is to fall in love with the illusion. Isn't that funny? Because when you fall in love, you and the world disappear. That's the nature of love. It's just intimacy. So I'll do the introduction for the first half, and then I'll invite anybody to ask questions in the second half. I think I said that in the beginning. When I shut my eyes, it's not finished. It's just a moment. And I don't mean anything by shutting my eyes. You're more than welcome to look around, and I just like it. So whatever you think about this present situation isn't true. The person wants to hang on to something it thinks. This is wrong, this is right, this is the best, this is the worst. It's a movement. And there's lots of other things moving as well in this. And there's nothing that's more you. And yet it's all you. So there might be these thoughts appearing, which you think are you and happening in you. There might be these feelings appearing, which you think are you and happening in you. but they're actually happening everywhere, in everything. They're not happening inside of you. There's not an inside and an outside. The sound's appearing as well, but the personal energy says they are outside of me. They're separate from me. That's not true. They appear in the same way as the thoughts and the feelings. When you stop thinking about yourself and the world, this becomes really apparent. Sounds are happening in the same way that thoughts and feelings are happening. The ticking of the clock is as close to me as the thoughts and as the feelings. They're all happening in this. This is where it begins to become so apparent that this is a world of love. The same with the breeze on the skin, or the coolness on the skin, or the heat on the skin. I think there's a movement of air happening. The mind says, the movement of air is outside of me, and the skin is me. That's a very logical thought, but in the instant of experiencing, that's not true. There is no inside and outside. The inside and outside were taught. There is no air which you are feeling. There is just feeling happening in this. So what we've been taught is we are drinking. And drink is going into us, and the drink is separate. But right here, that's again a lie. Right here, there is tasting happening, and there's not a divide between that which is tasted and the tasting, or the taster. They're the same movement. And then we open the eyes, and the mind says, I see people out there. Not true, right here. That's not true. That's something you've been taught, and it's become an energetical belief that there is space between you and me. Right here, there's no space between us. In fact, sometimes I feel like you have to be like, woo. There is no distance. Where does you begin and other? Only in time, in imagining. And that imagining was very practical and is very practical, but it's not truth. It's not reality. We've taken it as a reality. They are out there, I am in here. That is not a reality in the instant of this experiencing. Right here, everything is you and in you. Then the question is, who are you? Who's the experiencer? Again, I really can't answer this one. We imagine the experiencer is somebody that's arrived here in time. We imagine the experiencer, like you, is somebody that arrived here in time. I am somebody that's had 30 years of life We imagine the experiencer to be a product of time. That's what we imagine. We imagine the experiencer to be here as well. We are experiencing here. We take a 15. Okay.
Oh, but what was the key moment of recognition in the story of Lisa that stopped the hopping onto thoughts and identifying them?
It wasn't really a recognition, it was just an energetic change from inside to nowhere. Being inside here to nowhere, to just life appearing. But it wasn't something I did or thought or understood. I always thought it was going to be an understanding, like a intellectual understanding that I couldn't go back from. I got something. But it was just a shift in energy. And I But I've heard that some people say that seems to that's a gradual thing, and then some people it's a ultimately it can't be a gradual thing because there's never really somebody moving in time. In the apparent story, sometimes that energy change seems like a gradual thing, and sometimes it's quite a spontaneous thing.
So from one moment to another, the hopping onto didn't happen anymore.
Well, then it gets weird. After what happened here is it is that energy changed over, but it became then what happens is there's nobody at the back of experience watching experience anymore. Mm-hmm. So experience is happening in boundlessness.
Mm-hmm.
So then even if there was somebody coming back up again, I don't know how that would be seen. Like, it, even if there are still some things working its way out in the body, there's not really a watcher anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just happening in emptiness. But to believe that you're ever at a place or ever finished would be a very silly thought to believe. Mm-hmm. So it's an energetic shift that happens, and it's really not about that movement of that one that feels like it's in a position somewhere. It's that one that feels like it's been living its life collapses. And it's quite mysterious as to how it grew or how it collapses. Like if I asked you the question, how did you become you? You wouldn't be able to answer.
Mm-hmm.
How did you become you? It's a, it go, you just, the mind implodes. But also what I can also say is it's not like everybody's here is learning to be a ballerina. Like this place is talking about that, so there's obviously some energetic resonance that's happening, otherwise it wouldn't be appearing. This isn't ballet school or karate school. You never know what's going to happen. So maybe we just take a bit of a break and then afterwards do questions. But if you just...
So sometimes people say, sorry, there's still more talking coming. I know I said you can ask questions, just a little bit more. So sometimes people say that saying there is nobody, and I'm so flexible in my language when I say there is nobody or everything's you, but often I will say there is nobody. And sometimes people say this is cold or uncompassionate thing to say when somebody's suffering to say, but there is nobody. And I see it as the opposite, as love, because if there is nobody that this is happening for, so if there isn't separate people that this is happening for, then if there is somebody in this room suffering, then it's your suffering, in a way. So even when I say suffering goes, like personal suffering goes, and the person goes, when that goes, if there's somebody in here in pain, it's your pain because it's appearing in this. And this is where the love side comes of there is nobody. It's not a cold, detached, there is nobody when somebody's suffering. It's the you, the inside you. I am inside this body looking at the world through my projections of the world and my ideas of the world. When that collapses and somebody's screaming and shouting at you, or screaming hate or doing something violent, that also is you. And to see it as you is absolute love, but it's not an intellectual thing, it's the end of that barrier. So therefore there is nobody external that is the devil or the bad person. There is just life and forms happening. And if there is a form that is a violence, then that also is you. So there's nobody in here judging or in these in the body judging the external as something separate that's got life wrong. And that to me is absolute love. That doesn't mean that this body doesn't run away, or this body doesn't say stop, or this body doesn't respond to the situation. The body will do what the body does. But it means that there's not somebody judging that as something bad happening out there. There's not somebody in there resting in an idea of that's bad, that's happening out there, separate from me. They shouldn't do that, and it's nothing to do with me. It's absolute involvement in the situation. You are the situation. So if your lover is screaming and shouting, it's your screaming and shouting. If your friends are arguing and you're sitting, and then it's you arguing. There's not somebody there anymore judging that situation as something inappropriate. It's all you. Then that also means, though, when the saint is doing a beautiful act in front of you, that's also you. Or when there's a famous person collecting the Nobel Peace Prize or something, that's also you. And you get the joy of both sides. So often when it's said there is nobody, people imagine that's a cold response, but it's actually a really involved in response. You think, the imagination thinks that I'm saying to the other person there is nobody, as if like denying the pain or the suffering or the discomfort that's arising. But it's not that. This is intimacy with all things that appear. This is the end of denial of anything. Not just the denial of who you are, but also the denial of who the other is. As a separation.
You could say there's nobody else.
Yeah. Or, but then there's still not you. I know I keep slipping between the words. Like, there's just, but yeah, you could say there's nobody else. Whichever words, you can't quite get it. But yeah.
But the emotions arise. If I see violence, if I hear of wars, if I hear of people getting beheaded, it's not only a thinking thing, but it calls up very strong emotions, and I don't know how to detach myself of myself. Okay.
When the personal entity is there, so emotions can arise, but when the person is there, so when the separation is there, everything that's experienced in the flow of life, like a beheading or violence, the person relates it back to its incompleteness. And that beheading will trigger the deepest sense of I'm not loved and I'm vulnerable. I've been rejected from oneness. So when you see a beheading, you're not actually seeing a beheading. What the personal energy is seeing is themselves being ultimately rejected by life. Because to be beheaded by another human seems like the ultimate rejection of love. I mean, that's like, could it get worse?
Yeah, indeed.
That's like a sickening for the separate self. When that drops, there will still be emotions to that, but the emotions will not belong to anyone and will be contained in freedom. Even the personal sense of self, that sense of feeling absolutely rejected, is contained in freedom, but there's this tight focus on that sense of being rejected. So when you see the beheading, that tight, triggered, deep sense of feeling separate and abandoned by something is triggered. So you know the story of Adam and Eve, I'm sure most of us do, when they eat the apple, and then they eat the apple of knowledge, and then they get kicked out of Eden. That's the core of the sense of separation, is the sense of being kicked out. And it's just so beautiful, like that story. They eat the apple and they realize their own nakedness. They suddenly realize, or think they realize, that they're naked. And then as they think they begin to realize that they're naked, they get pulled out of Eden, of heaven. What seems to be happening now, though, is that humans can have knowledge, but it can be for nobody. So it can stop being knowledge, can stop being a fake individual, a fake sense of separation. So knowledge can still appear, the intellect can appear, the ability to apparently see time can appear and label things, but it's not who you are anymore. And it seems to be happening more and more in society that is dissolving, seems to be. So whenever there is that intense discomfort, that contraction, which is very different from emotions rising in freedom, whenever that's what's being triggered, is always your sense of rejection and not loved. But what the mind quickly does, or the person does, is it tells the opposite story. And of course, like, all of us would prefer it if someone now didn't get beheaded. But I have to take this to extremes so you hear it. So this isn't meant to sound incompassionate or like we wouldn't stop someone who's getting beheaded right now. More than likely, all the bodies would try and stop that. But there's also this other sense that looks at that situation and is triggered by feeling rejected and not loved by that situation. Then it tells the story, I've got to get away from this and make sure this never, ever happens. This never happens again. And I'm not saying this should or shouldn't happen. That's not what we're talking about. I'm just trying to point out what's happening in the person. Then the person will begin to blame the enemy. So it will then begin to make up that the other body-mind mechanism that's beheading is the enemy, is the bad person. And it will begin to want to eliminate the enemy. But that, so say if it's you that's beginning to, I'm the beheader, and here's the beheaded, the table's the beheaded, you will begin to see an evil person here that's acting independently. But all you're seeing is the same, is the opposite dynamic to what's happening there. So you imagine yourself in there acting independently and rejected from God. Then you imagine somebody out here acting independently and doing something wrong. So there's this separation that says you're the good person or the victim and I'm the bad perpetrator. But it's all in that illusion of self. When the illusion of self is there, that's all it sees is itself. So that dynamic happens, and then you will see me as the bad, evil person. When the illusion of self falls away, you will no longer see me as a bad, evil person. You will see me as this, as everything. But it doesn't mean you will see me as also you, but it doesn't mean that body doesn't stop this action. Humans are community animals, and they always seem to me to be very, what's that word? Where you help others.
Compassionate.
Compassionate, but there's another, altruistic. The humans have that, they're not like a tiger that lives by themselves, they're very much focused on their immediate surroundings of humans and other animals as well. The person that's doing the bedheading, though, believe it or not, will also feel like the victim. So funny the way it works. The person that's actually killing the other person will feel totally victim to life and will be doing out of the same sense that you feel when you watch it. That same contracted energy of not feeling enough and had something taken away from them. And then the mentality builds and builds. It's their fault, their fault, their fault. And it's the same thing. Okay. We're done with the beheading now.
I just took this extreme example because because it makes things just drastic enough to talk about.
It's funny, I don't even find questions anymore, but I asked you one on Ustream, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, that I kept popping in and out of this with at work with colleagues and with some family members. And you said that with these other people I was still seeking and trying to be loved.
Yeah.
And I said it made total sense.
Yeah.
The next day it completely changed.
Yeah.
I didn't think about it. I didn't do anything. I didn't discuss with my colleagues. But the whole situation has totally changed. Yeah. Now we're kind of in love with one another. We're happy at work. We're having plenty of fun.
Oh, nice.
And we didn't even speak about it.
It always is. All problems...
It gets more and more. Like,
all problems always come from that one that's looking for love in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. It creates this tension. How can I get her to like me? Mm-hmm. And all that effort normally gets them to dislike you. Mm-hmm. And then when you're trying to seek from love for another, you're also... seeing them as another. Uh-huh. Like you also have all these ideas about what they do or don't do. Mm-hmm. And the person's not there, you don't even think about it. It's just life happening.
But what happens to me is that questions and problems just vanish.
Yeah.
That is all.
It really is. It's a minus program, not a plus program. The problem isn't that you've got to get something here. It's the loss of the illusion, the loss of something that, well, wasn't really happening, but seemed to be happening. The loss of a force.
How does it come that we are so wrong taught from the very beginning?
I don't know.
What is that?
I don't know. It's just the way the movement of things have gone. And I don't know what comes first. I don't know if naturally that energetic contraction comes and then the parents support it. Like, I think it happens quite young, but it does certainly seem to build over time. Like, if you look at a 2 or 3 year old, there's so much less identity than a 30, 40 year old. So humans that energy seems to grow with the interaction of other humans. But why it begins just seems to have been the way the human is. Energy has flowed.
Was Eve's fault.
Eve's fault. What did she do again? I forget. She picked the apple and offered it to Adam.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
We like this because of women. Because the woman gave birth. One thing that I can say about that, though, is that I'm going to go back to my dog. Everyone's always like, oh, no, not the dog. How do you know, Lisa? But animals don't suffer because they've not got the ability to intellectually see things. So they don't, my dog, a beautiful specimen, she's divine. She, she doesn't have any sense that she's a dog. So she doesn't have any sense that she has pointy ears or black fur or that she's very handsome or a curly tail. She doesn't have a sense she has paws, even though they're seeing. There's no sense that is who she is. And without that first dynamic, there's no sticking. There's nowhere that gets stuck inside her. There's no claimer that happens. So there's no energy that claims thoughts or feelings or ideas. It's just all happening in this. There's aliveness and everything's in aliveness and is aliveness. But she doesn't know that. She just is it. Or you could say, you could take away the idea of her and then you'd equal at the same place. But what happened in humans with the ability, with language, the appearance of language. So when humans began to speak and think, they began to able to name things. They had to name things in order to communicate. I can't think of another way to communicate than this is a table and we know this is a table in comparison to other objects. This is a table and this is a chair and this is a floor and this is a carpet and this is a woman human and this is another woman human and a man human. And we know it in comparison to objects. Language works on comparison. And when humans began to speak, at first it was just speaking happening, but then with the ability to describe time, so I hunted this morning and I caught 10 fish, identity began to claim that. And they began to believe that who they were was somebody in time that caught fish, rather than this instant, this moment, which they were before they learnt language, just what's happening. They began to then believe they were someone moving in language, and the language grew on that, and more energy went into that. So I'm somebody that caught 10 fish this morning, and I am very good at catching fish. Then it grows even more the other way into the future. Tomorrow, I'm going to catch 20 fish. And then when he doesn't catch 20 fish, there's disappointment, and the whole drama of the human begins, and it gets more and more complicated. And that is true on one level, not really true, but that's something that happens for the human on one level, the big ability to describe the body, the actions of the body, that's something that's happening, but that's not who you are. But the humans begun to solely believe that's who you are, the description in time. But prior to language, there was just aliveness and everything happening, and no inside and outside. It was just happening. And that's when it's freedom. There's no suffering. There's not even pain and pleasure. They don't even have the ability to know this is good and this is bad. This is pleasurable and this is painful. It's just experiencing, pure experiencing for nobody. But then as language grows and this dynamic grows in human, there's more and more of a sense that I'm this body. And then it follows with an energy in this body. I am this body. I am moving through time. I'm my past, my future. I'm 80 years of life. And great suffering comes with this. Like just even this tiny idea that I've got to have a happy life creates a hellish life. Isn't that crazy? Because you're always living for the future. You're always living for what I should be getting rather than the simple experiencing of what is. You're always living in that world, and it's a false world. But amazingly now, what's happening in the human is that there can still be the description in time, there still can be intellectual thinking, but there can be a collapse of it happening to somebody. There's a collapse of that is who you are, that you are just that object moving through time, which is an amazing thing. And then with that, there becomes the ability to know home. So my dog never left home. She never dreamt that she was a dog moving in time. She was always just home. But she never knows that because she never left home. She just is it. Whereas the human, because they seemingly left home, they know it in some way. Not really. They are it. But there's some form of a knowing of it, which is quite a journey. It's amazing. It's not always amazing when there's like, feeling like Gollum out of Lord of the Rings?
Gollum,
that's it, yeah. Like, then there's that agony. But why it seems to happen in such a young child at such an early age, it seems to maybe just be in the genes of the human now.
I would like to ask, this expression, life is happening.
Yes.
I would like to understand it a little bit more in relation to how how this appearance is connected with that happening or is able to co-create sort of thing.
I don't know what you mean by co-create. Like, I know, I understand what other people mean, but I don't know what you specifically mean.
I mean, like, what I'm trying to say is when I hear life's happening, you know, it sounds a little bit passive. Like, yeah. If I'm not a victim, but if I'm just, you know, observing what's happening. Okay? And I have this idea that that I'm not just watching, but I can actually, in this life expressing itself, you know, I can put myself in a high frequency or I can put myself in a low frequency, for example.
Yeah.
No, I don't know where to put this I, because I'm saying I.
What do you associate I to be?
Just a vessel who can cope. Since I have this body, I mean, I appear in this body at the moment. So I can communicate with whatever is, with the stars, with whatever I choose to communicate with. So what I'm trying to say, or would I have to observe what life is going to, how life is going to express itself?
I don't really know, because when we begin to talk about experience, it's so hard to know what you have associated with your words and the association of certain words are here. But the experience here isn't that I'm passively watching it. It's that I am it, which doesn't feel passive at all. It feels very creative and very full on. But full on in English means like you're driving your car very fast. But that sounds negative. I mean, like you're very in it. When you drive your car fast, you can't think about yourself. Like you can't think about which way to turn left or right. It's a very immediate experience. But I don't feel like I'm creating in any way as a body-mind mechanism, but this absolute, which is what I am, creative energy creating. How many words, how many times does this say creating? So it's like, it's not like I'm planning to draw a picture here, or I'm planning to get $1 million in the next moment, or I'm planning to do something in the future. But my nature, not as a body, my nature feels like absolute creativity. So I don't really...
Okay, I could put it in a simple way of saying that you create your reality in a way.
But who do you mean by you?
I know this. I mean... life in me, I could say. I'm an empty vessel, right? But I'm still a vessel. I'm not thin air.
I don't know if our conversations are matching now. Like, it's the language is so hard because I don't know what you mean by that.
Okay, perhaps I should give up. I don't know how to express myself differently.
I don't feel like an empty vessel or anything in particular, but there's absolute creativity happening here, and I'm not separate from that creativity. But it's not a conscious creativity, it's a spontaneous creativity. I don't know if that helps at all. It's absolutely spontaneous, this creativity. It's so in love and immediate, like a kid playing. Like when you were a kid and you completely forgot yourself and were playing. It's hard words.
Okay, there's an apple there, right? And you're hungry.
Yeah.
Just as an example.
Yeah.
I'm like, who is going to grab the apple and eat it? I mean, it's the same... I'm talking about the same thing. I'm not talking about the apple, but I'm talking about some impulse coming out of me, whoever this me is.
Yeah. An impulse appears, yeah. Yeah. But it's not, and the immediacy of that impulse is what I'm talking about, but also that movement there is the immediacy, of this as well. An impulse is another expression. The movement of that hand is another expression. The light is another expression. This body seems to be the body in which this world is watched through. That seems to be that when the drink's picked up, this body is the vessel which experiences it. Like in a dream at night, the body is used in order to experience a dream. So when you dream, you often look at the dream through a particular body, normally this body. You don't just look at it from the moon or the sky, you look at it through a body. Like, and you experience the dream through a body, but there's not actually somebody experiencing the dream in the dream. There's just dream happening. And there's no place which you are, but yet you're experiencing it through that body-mind mechanism. But you're not actually seeing a world. You're not actually hearing a world. You're not actually feeling the world. You are the whole world. So creativity is this instant, but it's not a personal body-mind mechanism that's creative.
Well, what is the purpose of all that happening?
That was very bizarre. That felt like it came from here. What is the purpose?
Yeah, you said that creativity happens, and there is no a special identity to that creativity that is creating.
Yeah.
It's just happening.
Yeah.
And there is no purpose.
Well, I didn't talk about purpose, and I always respond to it. I always respond differently. If you've heard me saying stuff before, forget that. So this time the response is, what would be the purpose if you didn't know the word purpose? Would there still be purpose if you didn't know the word purpose? Or is purpose something that's been taught and doesn't actually exist? Because if purpose doesn't exist, then we've based a lot of our lifetime on purpose, on imagining getting to a purpose. But imagine if we just made up the word in the first place. Imagine if we made up a word now, like... But I've got to make up the sound. So, like, haya. So, haya. And haya means light coming out of your eyes in the future. that's just what it means. Haya. And so then we're all looking for this experience in the future, but we made up the freaking experience. There was never, like, we made it up. We made it up in the first place. So what about if we just made up the word purpose, and then we spend our whole life looking for purpose, but we made up the word in the first place?
Yeah, well, I didn't mean in a conceptual word. I mean in like a...
In this instant, the purpose is creativity. Oh, I don't know if I'd know the difference. I know I speak English, but it's not a very intelligent brain. Like intent and purpose. I don't know. I'd be like, I have to explain intent first.
Immediate and purpose is more conceptual.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing how all these associations to words happen. So intent is more what do people have intent with? More?
I wasn't able to speak or something. It's also on my interpretation.
But yeah, the purpose in this instant is creativity. Because that's what's happening, creativity. That's always what's been happening. But we're often, the person who made up the word purpose is looking for purpose in the next moment. And what tends to be, after people have got out of the material searching, so money and lovers and like searching in that realm, then tends to be the purpose to save the world. That tends to be the flow of it. And then they begin to fail at that as well, and that begins to be questioned. But that was a very bad intellectual answer to saving the world. But that tends to be the flow of it. So I watched this really cool film called I Am. Have you seen this film, I Am? It's by the director of, I think it's Ace Ventura. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. Like with Jim Carrey, Ace Ventura? I don't know.
Yeah.
One of those films. So he's like a director of comedies. But then he went through this massive spiritual awakening because he then like made it really successful in Hollywood. And then he had a massive mansion and he got into his mansion the first night and then he was like, now what? Now a big space. And then his whole idea of money and big mansion and success suddenly collapsed, and then he felt very purposeless again because for years his purpose had been for financial success and material success. But then, bless, it's really sweet because the title of the film was I Am, I thought by the end of the film he was going to get to I Am, as in aliveness or what we talk about now, like as in like this. But then he went from that to the conclusion that he shouldn't have money and he should give all his money away, which is really amazing. And it's amazing that he documented it. So he gave all his money away and then he went to live. So there's this really famous director in Hollywood who still produces films, but then he's living in a caravan, like a little mobile home. I think this is so cute. And then he spends all his time outside of making films, helping others. And that's a very sweet story. And the reason the film's called I Am is because I am, so therefore I can help other people. But eventually he's going to realize it's not in that. Like, that's a really sad realization, that one. That one really hurts. Because at least, the money and all the other things you can give up, but the idea of saving other people, that's a really painful one. Because if you can't save others, then guess who else you can't save? Yourself. So that's a really, really sad one to give up. And so I really thought that's what was going to happen in the film. And he's like saving others. And I was like waiting for, I am. And then he was like, I am, therefore I can help others. And I was like, oh. And that's a really sweet story. But it's never going to work. You're never going to be able to make everyone live forever in a paradise. The nature of this is to move. And so with movement comes the death of things. They're not really dying, they're just changing into other things. But I mean, like, everything's always going to go, like, you love this person so much, or you love your child so much, eventually it's going to get old and then turn into another object. You're never going to be able to save this world. It's always moving. its nature is to create and then move into other creations constantly, which to a human, that can be very scary. And to realize that you can't save others is then to realize you can't save yourself and you can't make this this body permanent. You can't mortalize this body and you can't save somebody inside this body because everything moves and changes. It's a really tough one to give up. Most painful.
What's wrong about being Mother Teresa or something?
Nothing wrong with it. Nothing.
Because you're saying this guy is going to find out that this doesn't work.
Yeah. But there's nothing wrong with it while it gets played. But eventually he'll begin to find that his savior, what he's looking for, oneness or completion or the end of suffering, is not in saving the world. That doesn't mean that after awakening happens that the body doesn't carry on helping kids or helping others. But he's never going to find his freedom in saving others or saving himself. His freedom is the appearance of it all.
Yeah, but it could be a byproduct of enlightenment.
Yeah.
That you want to... There's nothing wrong helping other people.
No.
I mean, if you don't make it the title of your story.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with helping others, but when people believe that that's going to give you fulfillment, it will always break your heart. It will always be the tragedy. So when you believe, it's easy to see it in material objects. So when you believe, when a body-mind mechanism believes that my lover will complete me, that's obviously going to, at some point, disappoint you because all objects come and go. Eventually, the object in some way or another will go. It will either die or change or move somewhere else. There will be moments of joy with it, but eventually all objects change into something else. And that's exactly the same with saving the world. If you believe that your freedom or your happiness or what you're looking for is in saving kids, your heart will always break because you will never be able to get to the end of saving something.
But perhaps you don't want to get to the end.
Well, then that's a different conversation.
Can you say something about this it's in the appearance, you said?
Yes.
It's in the what you look for, so when that person feels lack and is looking for something, it thinks that it's looking for it in separate appearances. So it thinks it's looking in stopping people suffering or in keeping your lover or in certain things or making your work colleagues appreciate you or whatever it is. It believes it's in objects or in something it can think about. But actually what you always looked for or what was appearing. And what is appearing isn't separate. So the answer is always in the instant of the moment. Remember earlier when I was talking before the break and we had our eyes shut about how in this moment there's not sounds appearing outside or inside, there's just sounds appearing. So in the instance of this moment, there is no separation. There is just freedom, boundlessness. And this is what the separate person always seeks. But the separate person is looking in past and future. And it will never achieve that. It will never achieve getting it in past and future because past and future don't really exist. It's always in what's appearing. The separate person is often running away from what's appearing because it's beginning to... Firstly, in what's appearing, it disappears, but also in this, often the separate person feels uncomfortable about itself, so it's trying to fix that. So it's kind of sometimes in the discomfort. It's in that sense of longing and that sense of lack, not out of it. But the mind says, oh, it's out of this, it's getting out away from it, it's doing something about it. this is opposite to what most body minds have been taught their whole life. They've always been taught to create their happiness, make their happiness, and get their happiness.
So it's even in speaking also.
Yeah.
In speaking, in the touch of the lips.
Yeah.
It's in it all. But the focus has always been on that narrowness in time, and that narrow person in time. But it's in the sound ticking. It's in whatever's appeared.
Is it in it or is it it?
Is it really?
Yeah, it's not too.
No. Is it whatever's appearing? Like, yeah, it's just language.
So would you say that there is, you can't say there is any difference in the quality in which it appears. I mean, there's no difference between like making love to someone or killing them in the end.
Ultimately.
Yeah,
ultimately, there's no good and bad action. But, yeah. I mean, what... in the moment, it's more pleasurable to making love than the killing. That's not a nice part of this. But ultimately, it's not being judged by anyone.
Yeah.
Like, and it's all you, or it's all nobody. It's all this, whichever ways you want to put it. It's like a dream at night. Like, there's nothing that's outside of that dream, and it's all your dream.
And if I watch someone else, we're back to beheading.
Yeah.
So if I watch someone do this,
I have to say sorry.
No, of course we all think about it a lot because you see it a lot. Everyone talks about it, but what I see in the moment and the person doing it is me also.
Yeah, it's all everything is. Yeah. But when that person, like somebody that's not got a self, wouldn't behead. Mm-hmm. That just wouldn't happen because mm-hmm. that beheading, the person that's beheading, the way it has to be programmed is feeling victim to life.
Mm-hmm.
It feels victim to life and it feels victim actually to the person it's beheading.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like that person has taken something away from it. Like it feels like the person it's killing has taken something from it, has done something to it, and it feels that sense of not feeling loved, which is the base of all personal mm-hmm. dynamics, is being triggered by the person it's killing. So it's so bad, that trigger, that it's got to kill that person.
Yeah, I understand. But since you say nothing happens personally, when yeah. you're taking things personally, why is it that we... seem to feel things differently
from
like my personal or your personal feeling is
yeah
I wouldn't do this and someone else would.
Oh, just because of the way that things seem to happen is it's one thing to another thing to another thing. There's not cause and effect, but
mm-hmm.
things are always moving from one thing to others. And if you, like this moment is a result, if we look in the illusionary time of things, is a result of everything that came before,
mm-hmm.
everything, right back to the Big Bang, the dinosaurs, mm-hmm. the parents making love. Mm-hmm. So the reason that body-mind mechanisms see things differently mm-hmm. is because the brain is wired differently genetically, and then the conditioning which has happened in the life. So that brain is firing different chemicals to different situations. And it's not you seeing it differently, it's just the response is happening differently. And then there's two, there can be a brain that no longer has a sense of self, but it's still firing chemicals responding to situations. Or there can be, I mean, it's not really ultimately, but in the illusionary, when we're talking about it in this way. So each body-mind mechanism has totally different associations to words. So the word love, every body-mind mechanism, if they had to paint it, would paint it differently. If they had to describe it, would describe it differently. If they had to pick a song of love, it would just be insanely different, each one. So that's why, because there's different, and it basically is so impersonal. I don't mean to make it sound dry, but it's just different parts of the brain activated, creating different chemical reactions.
And why is this? Is this the mystery that we don't know?
No, that's actually quite explainable. That's just the nature of the movement of things, and the body is an expression of that movement. It's ultimately all happening in stillness, but in the apparent movement of things, it's one thing leads to another, to another, to another. Mm-hmm. So this now turns into body.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it all comes to nothing at the end of the day, because this isn't a solid separate thing. It's something that always changes into something else. Even this body, Lisa's body, is changing at the moment. It's always changing. It's never still. It's always moving, the flow of things. Then there's another side to it that's perfectly still. But in that movement of things, it's always one thing to another, to another, to another, like a kaleidoscope.
Mm-hmm.
There's never, ever anything actually happening in a kaleidoscope. There's just lights, the same lights changing again and again and again, giving the appearance of a colour show, giving the appearance that something's actually happening. And it's the same energy here changing again and again and again. You are the Big Bang, the dinosaurs, your parents, everything that's ever happened. But it's the energy in this still moment changing like a kaleidoscope, just like a kaleidoscope. But it will follow that rule, that logic, that sense. It's not like dug, 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 dug. It's that this body's been a flow of everything. So, and then these bodies are used to experience what is. They're used to experience this. They're not really experiencing this. Like in a dream at night, do you see, do you feel, do you hear? When you dream in at night, the body-mind mechanism you dream through is not really experiencing the world. It just seems to be experiencing the world. It's not really seeing the world or hearing or feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's not separate from it. And in the dream at night, it's the same thing. It's like one thing leads to another, to another, to another.
And who's the one who's watching the dream?
You could say nobody, or we could say you are. But not you as you imagine yourself. Not you as something that's imaginable. Or we could say nobody. Like not somebody that you imagine. Like not somebody that we've defined as this body or something moving in time. Or you could say that essence that's always been there. When you forgot yourself, when you had a bump on your head, when you were 2, when you were 6, when you were 30... when you gave birth, when you cried over a sad film, that very same still essence that's been there no matter what's appeared. Or you could say nobody, because not a body. Not a body. I'll wrap up in a minute. It was just till 9:30 tonight. I think. I actually can't remember. It's normally when I do talks till 9:30. But I'm talking for the rest of the weekend. I forget. Tomorrow, I think it's at 2 o'clock. So you're more than welcome to come and join. And never let money be a factor. Like, you're always welcome to speak to me and Stefan. Like, I know we advertise a price because it's things that seem to need to be paid for, but never let that determine it. But thank you very much.
Thank you.